You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. With me is co-host extraordinaire, psychologist, Dr. Melody Fox.
And each week, we will bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future.
Melody, I had a chance to listen to the show last week while I was out of town, and as usual, you did a great job. I mean, the two of you just seemed to flow so well. You and the guest, I think you covered so much great information, and I loved it.
Well, thank you. I had a great time doing it. We actually missed you quite a bit, and you're out all over the country doing many things. I think you went on pleasure this time, right?
It was mostly pleasure, yes.
Okay, good. Well, welcome back. We're glad to have you back in the studio today. And, you know, this is just such a great opportunity to be here with you together.
Well, thank you. It's glad to be back with you. And for all of our listeners, each week we will continue to address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more.
And with each of us having over 30 years experience working with families in crisis, we've both been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in this field who are working to make this world a better place for all of us.
And we will bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family.
And today we'll be talking about why families of international at-risk teens are choosing U.S. treatment and educational facilities. And our guest today is Rebecca Grappo, founder of RNG, International Educational Consultants. Now, Rebecca, or Becky as she's known by many around the world, has a unique educational consulting practice. As someone who has lived abroad in 11 countries and speaks 5 languages, she is a perfect fit for the American family abroad or international families in need.
That's right. And her practice works with families all over the world with boarding schools, therapeutic schools, and college advisement, and sometimes the lines between the three all intersect. Mm-hmm. Becky told me at a IECA conference that nothing gives her greater pleasure than to work with a teen going into a therapeutic experience, and then a few years later, because they are doing so well, helping them with college admissions. Becky, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Well, it's great to have you, and we know that you're out of the country, but the connection sounds great.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like you're right here in the room with us.
It's actually better than our earlier phone connections, weren't they?
That's right.
Yes, it is. Now, Becky, I'm just really curious. How did you ever get into such a unique niche of working with, you know, expat and international families?
Well, even before my husband became a career diplomat over 26 years ago, I loved working internationally. And as a State Department family, we also raised and educated our own 3 children overseas, so I know firsthand that it's not always easy. Mm-hmm. I've also worked in international education for about 20 years, first as a teacher in American international schools, then U.S. public schools, and then as the education and youth officer at the Department of State. When I was at the State Department, I helped the families of American diplomats find education options for their children as they moved their families around the world. And when I did that, I saw all kinds of scenarios, including kids who needed additional support or services that could often not be found overseas. So therefore, lots of families would have to look at alternatives that would help to meet their needs, and often they were best met back in the United States. So when my husband was reassigned overseas in 2006, I decided that as I left the State Department, I would launch my own consulting practice because I could see that there were many other expats and international families who needed educational help and support. Well, so that's kind of how it all got started.
Well, it's very interesting, too, and you speak 5 languages, which I think is wonderful. I don't know how you keep them all separate, but, you know, you're working with all these different families and needs. Why the United States public schools? Why are they, or therapeutic schools, why are they a better fit for these international families than finding schools in their own countries?
Well, I think it's because we have the greatest range of therapeutic schools and programs in the United States. I get a lot of questions from families who, of course, would like to keep their children closer to them. And even before we even look at the United States, we're looking for options that are going to be closer to home. So that means, first of all, finding mental health professionals or school support services that are going to be able to support that child in need. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we reach the point where we're at the end of the line, and those resources that are available locally, internationally, are not going to be enough to support the child anymore. And that's when we have to start looking for stronger support. Mm-hmm. And there's not the same network of schools and programs internationally that we have in the States. So we might be able to support a minor learning differences in many schools overseas, but the type of therapeutic school that we have in the States pretty much doesn't exist. There are a few other offshore programs that I know about, but not in the same way. They're not developed in the same way as the programs that we have in the U.S. So therefore, a lot of times the families realize that they're kind of in a tight spot, and the best place to look is back in the United States.
Well, I was just thinking about the languages and the different languages. I mean, a lot of therapists in the United States, we speak English, and very rarely do we speak another language. How easy is it to find a therapeutic program that has other languages available to treat and work with the families?
Well, that's a great question, and it's actually a very important limitation. If I have a student that is really not able to converse in English, then I don't have many options available for them, mm-hmm. because almost all of the programs do have English language as the major component. But it's interesting you should say that, because I have a success story of a student that speaks Arabic. And, you know, there was about 2 years ago, we were wondering if he would ever graduate from high school. And now that he's kind of turned around and thinking about his future again, he has mentioned that he might like to become a therapist himself. And I've really encouraged him to think along those lines, because as far as I know, I don't have any other place where I can send an Arabic-speaking child, for example, who's going to have a therapist in a therapeutic program who's going to be able to meet them in their native language. The other thing that's really important is that sometimes the parents don't speak English either. Mm-hmm. And so maybe the teen speaks English, but the parent doesn't. And in those situations, we have to line up translators who can also work in the therapeutic sessions over long distance with the parents, so that they can continue to get the family therapy that they need to so that the student makes progress.
Sure, and I was also thinking while you were speaking about how, I mean, not only the languages need to be able to communicate, or people are need to be able to communicate language-wise, but also there's cultural issues to be respectful of when you bring kids from other cultures and other international cities into the United States.
That's also huge. It depends. You know, if the families have had a lot of experience already with the United States, sometimes it's not such a big surprise for them. But when you're talking about people from cultures around the world that may or may not know much about the therapeutic world, we have to be able to lay a foundation at the very beginning that we all understand. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what I do in the work with families is just to be explaining to them what the process is and what to expect next, and to manage those expectations as well, because the families are bewildered. They're overwhelmed. They don't really know what to do. And for them to even send their child to the United States if they're not Americans, or even if they are Americans, but especially when they're not Americans, they're taking a huge, huge leap of faith that somehow we're going to be able to help their child. And what's really amazing is that I've never had any families who've been disappointed. When they've come to the U.S. and they have seen the caliber of individuals who are working in the schools and programs, and how dedicated they are to these kids, and how absolutely selfless and committed they are always just amazed and impressed and grateful. So that's also one of the things that I find very satisfying about doing this, is because you take the family from the very beginning when they're scared, they're not sure what to do, they're not sure if they should really be going down this road, and then you see them when they get into the process, how just overwhelmed and relieved they are that all the people that they've encountered are just such wonderful, wonderful people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Becky, I think you bring up a great point when you talk about the difference in cultures. Now, do you foresee for instance, a place like the Middle East? Do you foresee them at some point in time trying to build on this industry? In other words, to try to set up more things from a therapeutic standpoint? Because I know that when I've been over there and I've talked with some of the people, I get the impression that they don't really want to build on that because they don't really want to acknowledge that it's a problem.
Well, that's a very interesting question, and I don't know if I can speak for all the people of that part of the world. I can just tell you what some of the issues that I've seen have been. One is that even if they wanted to open up these schools and programs tomorrow, they wouldn't have the number of skilled and trained people that they would need in order to run the programs. I would love to see your universities throughout the Middle East be offering more specialization in the fields of psychology and learning disabilities and other specialties that we would like to see in order to have a successful program. So first of all, it's not going to happen anytime soon just because they don't have as many trained individuals. Mm-hmm. Secondly, if they did have the trained individuals, would they want to open up such schools and programs? And that's an interesting question. I'm not really sure. I think that, as believe it or not, people throughout the Middle East watch Oprah and Dr. Phil, and they'll talk to me about it. So, you know, I've been in some very traditional settings where I'm talking to women that you would think would be, you know, very, very traditional, you know, kind of behind the veil, so to speak, and men as well. And they are absolutely up to speed on every latest Oprah and Dr. Phil show that's been out there, more than I, in fact. So they're becoming more therapeutically savvy and interested in what's going on. So I think that there are some people who would actually love to see something like this in their own backyard, and they know that this is needed and they would support it. I think there are others who might be a little bit more cautious about having something like this locally. I think that it depends on the family, whether or not they would be willing to be public about the issues that their children are facing. And that's where it can get a little bit murky, I think. I think there are a lot of families that would approach it differently. A third thing that I think is important, too, is that I've had therapeutic cases in that part of the world where the parents have been on board and ready to do it, and then the extended family has weighed in, and not everybody in the extended family has had a conversation with me or is fully up to speed. And then sometimes it just stops. It's not going to go any further because everybody isn't on board. So there are lots and lots of cultural things that have to be taken into account when working with these families.
Right. Well, it sounds like the extended family isn't watching Dr. Phil then.
But, well, sometimes they are too.
but I mean, and I understand your point, and I think it's a great point, is that if you look at their colleges over there, until they have enough courses that would allow them to start training their own people from a therapeutic standpoint, they're still going to need to continue to send their children over here.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I think even we have to think of what it took in order to develop the network of therapeutic schools and programs that we have in the United States. Even when you consider how vast the United States is in resources and population, think about how many do we actually have in the therapeutic world, and it's not that many. And how many of them in the therapeutic world are going to be able to fit, you know, that particular need? And again, not that many. So I think that, you know, for us to be thinking that this would be an easy thing to do in another culture that doesn't have a tradition, a cultural tradition of working with kids like this, I think it's not going to happen anytime soon, that's for sure.
Well, I was curious, as you were talking, I was thinking about, you are the founder of International Educational Consultants, and I was curious on what kind of services do you provide? What do you do? How do you help the families and therapeutic schools? How do they connect?
Well, I offer comprehensive educational services, so not all of the students that I have in my practice are therapeutic students. Mm-hmm. But I think what I have is an instinct for be able to pick up on cues and clues as to what a student might really need. So I might get a call from a parent saying, I need you to help me find a school for my child. And maybe I'm thinking this is a boarding school situation and that they're just looking for schools, or they're moving to another country or to the U.S. and they're just looking at schools. And then we start to find out more information, and then I realize, wait a minute, there's a learning issue here. Maybe that's what we need to be thinking about. And so that will become a boarding school with learning disabilities type of a case. Then maybe as we start to do that, then we find out the reason for the school failure and the learning problems has a lot of other things wrapped up into it. And then all of a sudden I'm thinking, wait a minute, this isn't just boarding school with LD. This is actually a therapeutic case.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes, you know, it's a crisis and we know immediately it's a therapeutic case. So, and then of course I do college counseling as well. So people call me with all different kinds of situations and scenarios. And I work very hard at what I do to be able to be conversant in the different worlds so that I can kind of tease it out as they're calling me. They might not even know what it is exactly they're searching for, and I can help lead them in that direction so that they're finding the solutions.
Now, what kind of issues do you see most in the students you work with?
Everything. Anything and everything. I think that one of the things that is very important when we're talking about families overseas is that it's easy for families overseas, I think, to think that our kids are going to be insulated from some of the problems that we find in the United States or some of the other developed countries and Europe, for example. But in fact, a kid who's going to be fragile in the U.S. is going to be even more fragile overseas, in my opinion. You know, when you're talking about moving children around the world, so we're talking now about, let's say, families that move from country to country. That's putting that kid under tremendous stress when everything has to be new and different and change. Some kids are just international and they're not moving, but again, they don't really have resources to be able to tease out what exactly their issues are. So what do I see overseas? I see kids who have learning disabilities that are either not diagnosed in a timely fashion, or if they're diagnosed, the learning needs are not able to be met. By learning needs, I don't mean only learning disabilities. I also mean kids who might have an exceptionally high IQ. Kids who have an exceptionally high IQ also have very distinct learning needs. They're also exceptional children. And it's surprising how many of the kids in my practice do have, you know, very high IQs where their learning needs have not been met. A lot of the kids have ADHD. A lot of the kids have other things like depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, substance use. I've had several kids who have had either suicidal ideation or kids who have actually taken action, made a suicidal gesture, some quite serious. So when I say I see everything and everything, I really do, everything.
Well, and I'm hoping that we have a lot of our international listeners listening at this time and hearing what you're saying, because I know that I was in Moscow at one time, and I ended up meeting with a group of attorneys, and they had asked ahead of time for me to speak before them, because they said, we want to talk to that guy that deals with those kids. But they didn't really know where it was going. And what they ended up saying when I spoke with them was these were attorneys who represented a lot of powerful people in that country, and they said, our teenagers are out of control, but we have no idea what to do, and the parents are turning to their attorney because they don't know where else to go. I mean, are you finding that in other countries as well?
Absolutely. I think that there's another problem, again, not unique to the United States. We have problems with kids around the world who have not been given clear boundaries by their parents, don't understand limits, have had a little bit of free rein, especially there are a lot of places around the world where if your family has influence, it's easy to evade responsibility and accountability. And so there are some kids who are out of control. And the other message that I give, I do a lot of public speaking to international school audiences, especially the parents. And one of the things that I say that may not be very the message they want to hear, but I tell them anyway, and that is that do not assume that just because you're overseas that your children are not exposed to risky influences or that they're at risk. They most certainly are. And if anything, if they're around a lot of money, power, in a place where they may not have, you know, because you know somebody you can get out of a criminal charge, mm-hmm. then we've got some problems. And I can think of a dozen cases in my mind right now of kids who thought that they could buy their way out of trouble.
Oh, well, we hear that in the news all the time here in the United States.
Like I said,
as well.
This is not exclusive to the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I was wondering, could you give us an example of how a case might evolve for you?
Well, how might it evolve? A lot of times, like I mentioned earlier, it might be just a phone call with a parent saying, I'm just really worried, and we need to be talking about another school. And so as I start to get more information, then I start to realize that it's more complicated than they think. And a lot of times, you know, the parent isn't even thinking therapeutic school when they call. They just know that things are not going well, and they don't know what to do. Sometimes somebody will call with a 5-alarm fire. I mean, sometimes we know that this is a full-blown crisis and that we have to act very, very quickly. Sometimes I'll know a family over a period of time. I mean, I've been doing this for a long time now, and I know a lot of families around the world. And sometimes we'll be tracking an issue for a while, maybe a year or more, before they finally decide that they're ready to do something. So cases evolve in all different kinds of ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just curious, are there any unique challenges that you have working with Americans or international families?
Well, obviously, time and distance.
Okay.
That's always a challenge. Being able to, I think, cross the cultural divide is probably the most important thing. I think that, again, whether it be an American family that's living overseas or another international family that's sending their child to the United States, no matter what the situation is, those parents love those children, and they would do anything in the world for them, and they mean everything to them, even if they're really struggling. And so I think it's very important that they feel comforted and reassured that their child is going to be in good hands, and that this is something that is going to evolve and hopefully have a happy ending. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the biggest challenge, I think. You know, then there are all the logistical challenges. If we're dealing with an international student, we have to be thinking about student visas and you know, when and how they enter the country. We have to be thinking about the logistics of the families getting to and from. We have to be thinking about setting up the times for therapeutic calls and staying in touch with everybody. But this is so much easier now than it used to be, because we've got Skype and Blackberries and smartphones and all kinds of other ways to stay in touch. And it's amazing. I'm in contact with families around the world every single day, and it's just as easy as picking up your phone and calling your next door neighbor.
Mm-hmm. I was just curious, as you were talking about getting the visas and navigating all those issues, that I was curious, what about if you have like teen runaways and they want to send them to some kind of program where they're going to get 24/7 supervision, they're going to get the help that they need. You know, do you work with kids that have been on the runaway path, or do you find them? How do you negotiate that, if you do?
Well, actually, I just had a case like that over the weekend, and fortunately, the father was able to handle the problem himself and get his son to the U.S. And in a program. But if it hadn't worked out, I had already told him that there are people who specialize in international transport, and one of them happens to be on this show.
Oh, Alan.
And, that was not a paid promotion.
No,
seriously, that, you know, sometimes I've told several international families that, look, if this is going to be a problem, we do have ways that we can safely have your child brought to the U.S. Where they're going to be absolutely cared for. The people that I would be working with are licensed, bonded, and insured. There's never going to be any force, and that they're going to be highly trained, so that if that's what we need to do, that's what we need to do.
So you work collaboratively with a lot of different people then?
Oh, absolutely. And also, you know, I had a crisis the week before last as well, and it had to be solved immediately. And I was just impressed once again by the professionalism of all my colleagues, because I just started making phone calls, and within 2 hours we had the situation resolved with transport programs, new programs accepting, programs sending. The child was safe and everything fell into place. And that's because the people who work in this industry are amazing. I just think they're special people, because otherwise who would want to work with some of the most difficult kids that there are out there and do it with such dedication and love, really. So,
I was going to say, I couldn't agree more. And I know that when we were at the last conference, and it was one of the things we were talking about is that, you know, it's such a great feeling when you're somewhere and there's, you know, 800 or so people that all get it. I mean, that are really there and they've chosen a profession that allows them to help other people's children. And it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It is. It absolutely is.
So, and another question that I have, you know, again, because, you know, I know lots of ed consultants, the ones that are based in the United States, I get it in regards to how they're able to keep current with schools, you know, they're able to tour them. I mean, you're taking on a much bigger piece of the pie. I mean, how do you keep current with the schools, the programs, and all the best practices?
I travel all the time. Even my own children say, "We don't know where to find you, Mom." So I've told them I need to have an ankle tracking bracelet so that they know where I am.
We can arrange it.
Exactly. No, you can't. No, I travel all the time. I have an incredibly supportive husband who knows that this is what I do because I absolutely love it. And so he's very patient about the time that I'm away from home. And my own children are launched now in their 20s, so they're independent. And so I'm at that point in my life now where I can do this. And so last year I managed to see almost 80 schools, programs, and boarding schools and colleges. That was a lot of time on the road. And so, and right now I've just finished up a very long trip where, again, I've gone to see schools, programs, and colleges, attend a conference. I stay busy, but I'm absolutely make sure that I see as many programs in a year as anybody else, because it is important to be current.
I think so too. And speaking about current, we currently need to take a quick break here, a little commercial break, but we're talking with Rebecca Grappos. She's the founder of International Education Consultants with Answers for the Family. And when we come back, Becky, in a couple minutes, we have some listener questions I'd like to throw out at you and see what you have to say about them, if you don't mind.
Okay, great.
Great, and we'll be right back to Answers for the Family. Stay tuned.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back to Answers for the Family with Rebecca Grappos as our guest today. And Becky, I do have a listener question for you if you're ready for it.
Absolutely.
Great. This came in over the internet. We really do appreciate our listeners emailing us in questions for upcoming guests. This one says, I am curious how U.S. immigration laws and regulations are structured regarding the length of time teens can remain in the U.S. while they're attending programs or traditional schools. And that's a really good question, I think. Some therapeutic programs are really long, a lot longer than most visas. How do you deal with that?
Well, first of all, I don't claim to be an immigration expert. So if there's a question that I find is something where we need good legal advice, I have an immigration attorney that I turn to, because I don't ever want to be the one to be giving immigration advice that could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, this is why this is really complicated, because let's say, for example, that you have an international student and you want to get them to a program. Well, the first question is, do they have a visa, even a tourist visa, to get into the United States? If not, you know, if you're going to have to wait until you have that visa process, then you have to be thinking about, well, how are they going to come in? And then if they stay, if they enter on a tourist visa and then they stay and become a student, how are we going to have that change of status and do it the right way? And again, the length of stay, it gets very complicated. And so, again, these are all issues that have to be thought out ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And when I feel like there is an answer that I'm not sure about, I contact an attorney to get expert advice.
So everything is case by case.
Everything is case by case.
Okay. And there is another question here. I'm going to hog this up for Alan here. The question that came in is, I presume that you also help place children or young people abroad as well as in the U.S. What countries / cities outside the U.S. do you feel have the best and safest facilities?
Well, actually, I don't place any therapeutic students abroad. I know that there are a couple of American programs that are offshore, and I have used a couple of them for the right occasion. But in terms of knowing if there, what therapeutic programs are also outside the United States, and to be able to vouch for their quality, I don't do that. And if people ask for that, I'll be right up front and say, listen, I understand the United States, and I understand American programs and American schools that are not located physically in the United States. But other than that, I can't claim to be an expert on the entire world.
I don't think anybody can. And we have a comment that came in, and this comment says, we have hosted several exchange students over the years of high school age, primarily from Ireland, where my husband was born and raised. For the most part, it has been a very rewarding experience, but with one young woman, she got involved with a bad crowd. After discovering she was taking drugs, her family chose to put her in a facility in Utah. It was an amazing experience to see the difference in her after just a few months. She came back to live with us and finished out her senior year. So I think that's just kind of touching on some of the same things that you're saying.
That's a wonderful story, and how lucky for her that her family was willing to get her to treatment.
Mm-hmm. And for the exchange family to take her back into the home.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's wonderful. That's a great story.
That shows a lot of trust there.
Yeah.
It does.
Well, I'm wondering, how are you able to work with families when they are spread out all over the world?
Technology. And when it's good, it's great. And when it's bad, it's horrible. But for one thing, thank goodness for Skype. That's really changed the world. If we don't use Skype, then we use other tools at our disposal. Having a smartphone with me at all times is indispensable. Always having my laptop with me. I have to have it with me at all times. And the other thing, too, is that I can safely store all of my student records in the cloud, you know, and it's secure, and so we're abiding by all rules and laws of confidentiality. But I now have my office completely with me at all times, and so I don't even need the physical space, so that if I'm out there traveling and visiting programs or schools, I've got everything I need with me. All I need is the signal.
Wow, you are very technically savvy, but doesn't make it, I mean, I guess your business would be 24/7. Do you ever take any downtime?
I keep promising that I will, but somehow it always kind of creeps in anyway. I don't take much of it.
Well, that's too bad.
But again, I mean, and I agree, we don't get a chance to take very much downtime, but at the same time, when you love what you're doing, you don't necessarily need it as much, I think, as people that are maybe, you know, not doing something that they just truly love.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true. That's true. Because as soon as I get up and my feet hit the floor, the first thing I do is check my BlackBerry. I want to see what's on it.
Well, I just keep thinking of that phone call at 3:00 in the morning saying, help, I'm in this part of the country and or this part of the world, and I need to get my child over to so-and-so today. And it's you're not even awake yet. I don't know how you wake up so quickly, but I guess you do. That's why you're good at what you do.
I also have to be flexible because I have so many clients around the world, and so I keep my iCal on my computer open at all times, and I also have a time zone website that I keep open so that I'm always double checking and triple checking my appointments that I'm making with families before our phone calls to make sure that I got the time right and that I've recorded it correctly.
Well, yeah, that, and we know that when there's a crisis, people really aren't taking the time to figure out what time zone they're in versus the one you're in.
Exactly, exactly. And if the crisis hits, you have to be available. You can't say, oh, sorry, do you mind calling me on Monday?
Yeah, exactly. Now, I was looking at your website, and I noticed that you do a lot of presentations, and you write a lot of articles about, you know, about third culture kids. You know, can you explain a little bit further to that to our listeners, kind of exactly what that means?
Oh, first of all, thank you for looking at the website. Well, first of all, a third culture kid is someone who has spent a significant amount of time outside their parents' home culture without the intention of immigrating. So let's take, for example, an American child that's growing up overseas, knowing that someday they'll be going back to the United States. That would be an example of a third culture kid. But a lot of my students, for example, might be from another country living in a third country because of a parent's employment. So this is not only an American phenomenon. And there are many wonderful things about raising your children overseas. And we've got a lot of kids who are thriving and just becoming, you know, amazing, you know, pardon the cliche, but global citizens. On the other hand, some of the kids are not doing so well, and I think it's important for us to talk about what some of the downsides of growing up like this are. So we could spend the whole hour of this radio show talking about it, and I don't want to get into it so much right now, but I do go into schools internationally and talk to parents, students, faculty, and do presentations about raising kids overseas, third culture kids, which is the term you could Google.
Mm-hmm.
And I also do write some articles. I have an article that will be coming out in June in the Foreign Service Journal about protecting the emotional well-being of our third culture kids or our kids that are moving around the world. And for that, I interviewed a lot of people who are the people who are the foremost experts in the field of cross-cultural education, to get their feedback as well when I wrote that article. So I feel like it's incredibly important to understand that, and especially when we're talking about kids from around the world who are going into therapeutic programs, I spend a lot of time talking with therapists about what this means and what this lifestyle means, because it is an unusual lifestyle, and most people don't understand it if they haven't lived it themselves. And the therapists that I know are very curious. They're eager to know more about it. And I'm able to say, you know, because these are common characteristics of what we call TCKs, when you're in therapy, I suggest that you might want to explore some of these common themes and see what you come up with. And that always raises some interesting topics in the therapeutic experience that is very important to getting at the bottom of some of the issues that these kids are having.
Well, it sounds like a very important area to look at, and hopefully there'll be more research on that too.
There is more research that's being done. It's kind of exciting because this is a field that most of us have been talking about now for 30 years or more, and not many people have known about it. But now, I think also because of the explosion of social media, the message is getting out there, and some young, talented writers are also coming up with some new and things. You know, if anybody's interested, I would invite them to follow my own blog or my Facebook page on my website, Twitter, which you can find on my website, which I guess we'll give that address later.
Well, actually, I was just going to ask you.
That's so funny. We were both looking at each other, and we pointed towards the website, and we pointed to each other as to who was going to be the one to ask that as the next question. And so that's so funny that all three of us, you know, through our conscious energy, we all went to the same point. So yes, please give us the website and the Facebook account.
Okay. So the website is my name, www.rebeccagrappo.com. That's RebeccaGrap, as in Paris, P as in Paris, O.com.
Okay.
If anyone goes to my website, every single page of my website has the icon for Facebook, Twitter, or my blog, or my newsletter, and they can, you know, just click and they'll be led exactly to the site where they can sign up.
Well,
so I publish, you know, I find things all the time that I think are interesting that have to do with educating and raising children, especially when they're international. Mm-hmm. And so I just put it on my Facebook page almost daily and invite people to look. I'm not trying to sell them anything. It's just my way of being able to share. And when people actually provide feedback and comments, then I actually get excited because I know someone's reading it.
Well, that's always a good feeling. I know we feel that way, too.
Right.
And if I could just say one more thing, the name of my practice is RNG, International Educational Consultants.
Okay. Oh, that's right. RNG, right. Yes.
RNG, International Educational Consultants.
Well, I was just curious, because you get such a lovely lilt in your voice when you're talking about what you're working on. So what do you like best about your work?
Oh, thank you. I love it. I love any kind of case. I just get excited about it. To me, I guess what's really exciting about it is the fact that I believe in the inherent value of every single child, no matter where they're from. There's something about every single one of them that's really beautiful and good. And sometimes they get lost along the way, and that could be for a number of reasons. But it just has to be discovered again. And so how do we find a way to help them be the best possible version of themselves? And, you know, obviously if we can find a way to do it so that they can stay at home and live with their family and have less disruption, then let's do it that way. But if we reach a point where that child no longer is thriving, but instead they're just hanging on, they're just barely surviving, then let's do something about it. As long as, you know, the family is able, willing and able to do it, let's change that kid's life. And what could be more exciting than that? So I love what I do.
Well, it definitely comes across and it sounds like it. And I know you work not only with teens, but you also work with a lot of transitional age youth that are going into college.
That's correct, yeah.
And are there special circumstances working with college kids coming from other countries to over here or vice versa, or how does that work for you?
Well, I see it a lot in, for example, young adults. So I'll give you a couple of quick examples. For example, I have a student right now that's transitioning out of a therapeutic boarding school, graduated from high school, which was a goal we thought impossible a year and a half ago. Well, parents thought impossible a year and a half ago. I knew he would. Mm-hmm. And then we worked together on the college admissions process. And so now I'm working with him to get services once he gets to college, because I don't feel like this particular kid is completely out of the woods yet. I think that this particular student is going to need to find that support when he gets to college so that he's not overwhelmed. And with the ADHD, I know that the challenges for him are going to be time management and organization and study skills. I know that he's going to need to stay away from the party culture so that he doesn't relapse. I also know that there's a history there of depression and anxiety. And so you can imagine if he starts to get overwhelmed, how that could come back again. Mm-hmm. And so we have to be thinking about services, how to get support services, how to arrange the schedule for him, and how to get all that in place to support him as best as possible. Kids that don't have that support, then sometimes I see them after they have failed in college. And, you know, I have another student that has failed college several times and is so determined to succeed. As this particular student has struggled, I've tried to do numerous things. Not every piece of advice is heeded. However, I have been trying to find an ADHD coach that will work with her long distance. I've gotten psychological and psychiatric support for her, therapeutic support for her, and, you know, hopefully she'll be able to get it together. And what's so sad, well, I actually wanted that particular student to be in a program that would be even more wraparound, but the student didn't want to do it. So, you know, we take the situation the best we can and build in as many supports as we possibly can, because I see where this student has so many talents. Mm-hmm. I want to see her thrive. Well, and she's still in the game.
Well, it sounds like you said she's determined to graduate college, which means she's got some fight there.
That's true. That's true.
And I'm going to do a plug here. About Alan's looking at me like, what are you going to talk about? Alan's very humble about this, but he has a book that he contributed to that just came out. It's on the bestsellers status in 6 categories after only 24 hours. It's called Fight for Your Dreams, The Power of Never Giving Up. And that's,
wow.
You know, and Les Brown, the motivational speaker, wrote the book and asked Alan to contribute towards it. And he did a whole chapter.
Yes.
I believe.
Yes.
And it just came out, and it's exciting news. We just found out that it came out in 24 hours. But when you were talking about this college student determined to graduate college and not give up.
That's right. That means fight for your dreams.
That just means that she's got the power never to give up. And she could go for it, and she could make it, and make it happen.
Okay, I'm ordering multiple copies of it. Let me hang up, and I have several kids I'm going to send this to.
Yeah, please do. You can find it on Amazon.
Absolutely. It'll be on my Facebook page, too.
Well, it just came out this weekend. Did you just find out?
Absolutely, yeah. The release was this weekend, and we are very, very proud. All of us as contributors are very proud of the fact that within 24 hours it reached Amazon number one bestseller status. So.
In 6 categories.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
So he's turning red a little bit here, but I had to bring this up and do a plug for his book because I just think it's marvelous. And it kind of goes with what we're talking about today is, you know, we're fighting for our dreams. We're not only fighting for ours and not giving up, but we're not giving up on the needs of the kids that we work with and the families that we work with.
Exactly. We're fighting for all of their dreams as well.
Exactly. And that's why we do this. And that's why, you know, the fight isn't easy. I mean, just because we find the right school or program doesn't mean that all of a sudden the problems are magically solved.
Right.
And the other thing, too, is that sometimes we need to still be talking to the parents so that the parents know how they need to support their own child as well. You know, they don't totally get it. And one student came to me and just needed hours to talk to me in my office and just said, thank you for understanding. Thank you for understanding. So anyway, I'm thrilled about your book. And like I said, I'm sending it to multiple students as soon as we hang up.
Thank you. And you brought up a great point when you just mentioned about the kids. You also mentioned about the parents. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things, and for the last 20 years, you know, I have wanted people to address this. It is also getting the parents on board. You know, sometimes we can get the kids to the program, but if the parents aren't on board and the kids go back to the same environment and backslide, we've really done them a disservice. So I love the fact that you just added that, is they really need to keep those parents on board as well.
And it's not just with the teens. I think with the college students, too, because a lot of times parents think, well, they're in college now. they can take care of themselves. But I think no matter how old you are, you still need your mommy and daddy to be there to support you.
That's right.
Absolutely. Just in a different way. It's going to be in a different way from
sure.
when they were in high school, but they still need and want their parents' support. So that's a really important thing, and especially when school starts to get kind of hard for them, then that's a time, if I'm involved, where I spend a lot of time, probably more time with the parents than I do with the actual student.
Well, I would imagine it would be in educating the parents on how to support their child and help them get their needs met and not be upset that they're getting Fs in all their classes or they're skipping school, to understand there's a reason behind that and to help them understand we need to find the reason so we could help their child be successful and succeed in life.
And that's exactly right.
Well, Rebecca, thank you so much. I cannot believe I just looked up, and we are just about out of time. We have about a minute. And again, just thank you so much. We appreciate the fact that you're out there. Mm-hmm. And for everybody listening, you know, you got the website. It is www.RebeccaGrappo.com. For those of you driving and you couldn't write that down, know if you go to the Answers for the Family blog, Rebecca's information is there. Mm-hmm. Again, Rebecca, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And keep doing the good work out there.
Thank you. And likewise to all of you. And thank you for giving me this opportunity. It was a pleasure.
All right.
Thank you. Safe travels, too.
Yes, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye
okay.
now.
Thank you.
And for all of you out there, continue to do the good work that you're doing. Know that together we can all help many, many children. Have a great week.
See you next week.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox. right here on LA Talk Radio.